Hello and welcome to our program, Travel, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Jeff Chandler, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from various travel outlets here on OWL Radio. Let's get started with an article from the San Antonio Business Journal. This is by W. Scott Bailey, and it's entitled, Here's What's Next for $2.5 Billion San Antonio Airport Expansion. The city of San Antonio is nearing a critical point in the development of a landmark airport expansion and improvements plan that could cost more than $2 billion to implement over the next two decades. The centerpiece of that plan is the construction of a third terminal at San Antonio International Airport that can provide more capacity for inbound and outbound flights as demand continues to increase. We're in the final stages of the advanced terminal planning that we launched earlier this year, said Jesus Sainz, Director of Airports for the San Antonio Airport System. The plan should be completed by the end of the year, Sainz says. Terminal C anchors the first phase of the airport expansion, with its cost projected earlier this year to approach $950 million. Once completed, Terminal C could house as many as 17 new gates. As that project is part of a larger plan involving multiple elements undergoing separate planning, construction may not begin before 2024. Planners need to get terminal design work to a certain stage so they can then seek necessary Federal Aviation Administration and environmental approvals. That process will likely take the better part of a year. City officials also have to decide on a project delivery plan, which could include construction, management, or design-slash-build team overseeing the brick-and-mortar work. In May, the city beefed up its executive team to help guide the airport planning and development process. Among the additions was Tim Okrongley, Deputy Aviation Director for San Antonio Airport System. He's overseeing planning, design, and construction for the project, including the new terminal. Some construction work on other parts of the airport expansion will occur much sooner. In the next 30 to 60 days, we're going to open up three new gates, Sainz says. We'll add one gate in Terminal A and two gates in Terminal B. Soon after, airport officials expect work will begin on a new ground-loading facility in Terminal A. That project will include as many as five new gates and is now expected to be completed by the middle of next year. That will get us to approximately 30 to 32 gates, Sainz says. Our next article is from the San Antonio Express News, and this one is in the travel section, and it's entitled, Las Vegas Has Something for All Ages, and it's by Paul Pearson of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Las Vegas. Let's face facts. Not everyone who visits the Las Vegas Strip is old enough to drink or gamble. But this place didn't earn its title of entertainment capital of the world by limiting itself to nightclubs and craps tables. If you or someone in your party is under the age of 21, the Strip has plenty to offer. Here's a look at some of the options. Take a ride. Why deal with the crowds at ground level when you can see the Strip from the sky? The Link Promenade offers two ways to get above it all. One is the High Roller, a 550-foot-tall observation wheel that has become an indelible part of the Vegas skyline since it opened for business in 2014. The other option, for those who want a little more thrill with their view, is FlyLink Zipline, which launches from 114 feet above the promenade and takes you 1,121 feet to the front of the High Roller. Grab a bite. These days, it's hard to find a Food Network show that doesn't feature someone with at least one restaurant in this town. The possibilities here on the Strip are endless. You can decide for yourself if Martha Stewart's whole roast chicken really is worth $89.99. That's $89.99. You can learn what all the fuss over Cronuts is about, or you can research whether Raising Cane's chicken fingers taste better when served in a two-story restaurant near the MGM Grand. dip a toe. The Strip is famous for its pool scene. Some of the pools are limited to those 21 and over, but many are available to all ages. And here's some good news for those who aren't visiting in the summer. Many of the pools are heated. Check with your favorite hotel for details. Find a bargain. Every block of the Strip seems to have its own haven for shopaholics. Over at Resorts World, established brands like Fred Segal mingle with online entities making their first foray into the brick-and-mortar world. Shopping centers like the Miracle Mile shops are evolving to capture attention in the brave new digital world. Catch a game. You probably already know National Hockey League record holder Phil Kessel and the Golden Knights play their home games at T-Mobile Arena. You might not know that it also hosts sports like college hockey, college basketball, and professional bull riding. Meanwhile, Michelob Ultra Arena at Mandalay Bay is the home of the WNBA champions, the Las Vegas Aces. And lastly, see a show. If current trends continue, residencies will soon outnumber buffets on the Strip. The list of current or upcoming residents include Bruno Mars, Garth Brooks, and Adele. And then there are special appearances by all your favorite stars. Kevin Hart came to town to tape a comedy special and might be preparing for a residency of his own. Jerry Seinfeld has dates booked for 2023. Gwen Stefani is booked for New Year's Eve. The list is as long as the Strip itself. Our next article is from the San Antonio Life section, and it's entitled The Bridges of Bear County. Tour the history of 10 of the more memorable spans along the San Antonio River. This is by Richard A. Marini, who is a staff writer. For early settlers, the San Antonio River was both a blessing and a curse. It provided water crucial for survival and to irrigate crops, while at the same time, its meandering course meant if you wanted to go almost anywhere, you had to cross the river. Sometimes, multiple times. So you had to build bridges, said Louis F. Fisher, author of American Venice, the epic story of San Antonio's river. And until the first railroad lines arrived here in the 1870s, you couldn't import iron to build those bridges. For decades, the city had to rely on wooden bridges that were often damaged or swept away during the river's regular flooding. Once iron could be shipped in from foundries in the east, however, erecting bridges became a matter of civic pride, with local businesses rallying to raise the money needed to build these river crossings. It was a big deal when a new bridge opened, said Freights Seligson, executive director of the San Antonio River Foundation. Nearly every downtown bridge has a commemorative plaque listing who built it and the names of prominent politicians like the mayor who were in office at the time. Because they cost so much, a bridge that had to be replaced wasn't scrapped. Instead, it often was moved elsewhere and repurposed. That's why, for example, the O. Henry Bridge gets two mentions here, once for its role on Commerce Street, and once under a different guise as a pedestrian bridge in the King William District. Here's a list of 10 historic, notable, or otherwise interesting bridges in San Antonio and Bexar County. Brackenridge Park Bridge. Originally located where St. Mary's Street crosses the northern branch of the River Bend, this lenticular truss bridge was built in 1890 by the Berlin Iron Bridge Company. Before it was moved to Brackenridge Park after being damaged by the 1921 flood of downtown San Antonio, however, it played an interesting role in the city's political history. Raised lettering on commemorative plaques at either end of the bridge were painted in gold, earning it the nickname the Letters of Gold Bridge. Because one of those names was that of the then-powerful mayor, Brian Callahan, often criticized by his opponents as a spendthrift, his re-election efforts were derided as the Letters of Gold campaign. Today, the bridge can be found toward the north side of the park. Those plaques painted completely in gold, so the lettering no longer stands out. The Brewery Bridge. For many years, the steel pony truss bridge that spanned the crenellated towers of the Lone Star Brewery building, today the San Antonio Museum of Art, on West Jones Avenue, served as a shortcut that relieved workers from having to climb up and down the tower stairwells. Before the building was renovated into a new museum, in 1981, however, the rusting bridge was removed and purchased by a Terrell Hills resident who, in 2005, donated it to the San Antonio River Foundation. The bridge was relocated and refurbished as part of the San Antonio River Improvements Project, and today a pair of honey-colored brick towers flank the picturesque walkway where it crosses the river. The Camden Street Bridge. Rippling like blades of grass blowing in the wind and river, plants billowing in the current, the metal panels running through the guardrails of this museum-reached bridge echo movements visible in the waters below, just as they were intended. Sculptor George Schroeder's work, titled River Movement, was completed in 2011 and is one of eight public art projects on bridges along this stretch of the river. Because the river improvement plan contained no money for art, all the work, plus repairs and upgrades to the steel-level railings, was paid for by $20 million in private funds raised by the San Antonio River Foundation. As an added attraction, the nearby I-35 overpass is the roost for a colony of thousands of Mexican free-tailed bats that emerge in dramatic waves to hunt on summer nights. Best of all, the show is free. Next is the Catalpa-Pershing Channel Bridge. This utilitarian pre-stressed concrete span over the Catalpa-Pershing is perhaps the most nondescript entry on the list. In 2011, it was embellished with a series of 24 handcrafted bas-relief panels embedded in the concrete guardrails. Created by award-winning ceramicist Diana Kersey, the bold green and blue panels illustrate the life cycle of the Gulf Coast toad, an indicator of the health of area waterways, including the usually trickling waterway below. While cars mostly speed by the installation, a close look will reveal intriguing details Kersey has hidden in her work, including bees buzzing around a toad's head and the intricate patterns of the amphibian's back. The Commerce Street Bridge, perhaps the most historically significant bridge in San Antonio, if only for its location in the heart of downtown and the proximity to the Alamo, is the Commerce Street Bridge. Early iterations were made of wood, and an ornamental iron truss bridge erected in 1880 became known as the Literary Bridge because it appeared in the writings of Frederick Law Olmsted, designer of New York's Central Park. Musician, poet, and author Sidney Lanier, and most famously William Sidney Porter, a.k.a. O. Henry, in his short story, A Fog in Santone. In the story, he sketches a little iron bridge, one of the score or more in the heart of the city, under which the small, tortuous river flows. Hence its second nickname, the O. Henry Bridge, one of several iron bridges constructed by the Berlin Iron Bridge Company of East Berlin, Connecticut, and shipped to San Antonio via the newly arrived railroad. The bridge was dismantled and removed in 1914 when Commerce Street was widened. The bridge was replaced by the three-span concrete structure that exists today. You can find it on East Commerce Street between Lozoya and North Presa. The next bridge is the Donkey Lady Bridge. This otherwise unremarkable bridge would not have made this list were it not purportedly haunted. Legend has it that years ago, a rural farmer set his house on fire, disfiguring his wife and killing their children. The wife, her face burned and elongated to resemble a donkey, is said to haunt the nearby bridge, tormenting those who pass. In reality, the old Applewhite Road Bridge, as it's officially known, was built in 1917 and closed to vehicular traffic in 2005 when the new Applewhite Road Bridge was constructed nearby. The old bridge assimilated into the Medina River portion of the Howard W. Peak Greenway Trail system. No ghost allowed. And you can find it just north of the intersection of Jet and Old Applewhite Roads. The Navarro Street Bridge, South, 1922. This is the southernmost of the three Navarro Street bridges spanning the San Antonio River. In addition to its graceful concrete arches, the bridge is also notable for its decorative street-level balustrades and ornate lampposts. The bridge also is known as the Mill Street Bridge for the grist mill at one time located nearby. You can find it at Navarro Street between West Market and Villita Streets. The Old Henry Bridge. As mentioned in the Commerce Street Bridge entry, this bridge with its ornate iron trusses and stylish arches got its nickname for being mentioned in an O. Henry short story and was removed when Commerce Street was widened in 1914. But that's not the end of the story. Iron bridges were expensive, so instead of scrapping it, the bridge was moved to what is today the King William Historical District and installed at the Johnson Street River crossing. 50 years later, when that section of the river was widened, the bridge was removed temporarily, with the promise that it would be extended and returned once the river work was completed. At the time, the nearby Sheridan Street Bridge also was dismantled, and the two were stored off-site. However, when workmen were sent to scrap the Sheridan Bridge, they inadvertently destroyed most of the O. Henry Bridge as well, much to the dismay of local conservationists. A pedestrian bridge designed by Ford, Powell, and Carson, and smaller than the original, replaced the original in 1983, with only two of the original spires. Rosita's Bridge, one of two bridges designed by architect Robert H.H. Hugman, often called the father of the Riverwalk. This charming limestone archway connects the open-air Arneson River Theater stage to the tiered, grass-covered riser seating across the way. In 1982, the footbridge was named for Tejano singer Rosita Fernandez, known as San Antonio's First Lady of Song, who performed for popes, presidents, and princes. For 26 years, she appeared at the theater in Fiesta Noche del Rio, regally crossing the bridge to sing favorite Spanish-language songs. And you can find this bridge, of course, at 418 Villita Street on the San Antonio River. And lastly, University of the Incarnate Word Walking Bridge. This bright red metal and wood footbridge, built sometime in the late 1970s or 80s, connects to desperate sections of the school campus. Academic and campus life crossing a wooded area not far from the Blue Hole, where the waters that form the San Antonio River emerge from the Edwards Aquifer. The picturesque bridge is a favorite backdrop for graduation photos and the occasional marriage proposal. Along with the campus clock tower, it has become an iconic image identifying the school. And you can find it behind the natatorium near the football stadium. And I've walked it several times. Our next article comes from the San Antonio Express News under the Historical Tourism tab. Three Scenic Cities in Pacific Northwest, Part of Route Used by Lewis and Clark. This is by Alex Pulaski of the Washington Post. On their final push to and back from the Pacific Ocean, early 19th century explorers Meriwether Lewis and William Clark forever changed the Pacific Northwest and its inhabitants. Retracing their steps today offers a vivid contrast to the harsh conditions they encountered. Contemporary travelers can comfortably immerse themselves in three captivating Northwest towns along the route taken by Lewis and Clark's party, known as the Core of Discovery, Oregon's Hood River and Astoria, and Washington's Walla Walla, all within striking distance of Portland, have evolved in recent decades from resource-based economies to tourist draws with vibrant, historic downtowns. Each bears its own distinct character and relative advantages. Hood River is home to adrenaline-fueled adventurers swigging beer and cider. Astoria plays the colorful madam with a rich history, and Walla Walla has wine, wonderful food, and nearby spaces devoted to Native American heritage. At the Thomas Lick Cultural Institute, about an hour southwest in Pendleton, Oregon, you can trace the tribal genocide hastened by the Corps' passage and ultimately celebrate recent years of Native American resurgence. Pick one, two, or all three of these towns with an eye on the season. Hood River and Astoria are glorious in summer and fall, or if spring is mild. Walla Walla is ideal in spring and fall, but very hot in summer. Hood River offers skiing and other snowy adventures on nearby Mount Hood in the cold months, but lend an ear to Clark before braving an Astoria winter. He said, "Rained all the last night, we are all wet. The wind blew with such violence that I expected every moment to see trees taken up by roots. Oh, how disagreeable is our situation." He wrote this in his journal on November 28, 1805. As Oregon residents, my wife Mika and I don't allow a little rain to dampen our travel plans. We watch the weather and look forward to being behind the wheel as the magnificent Columbia River Gorge fills the windshield. From Portland, it's just over an hour's drive east to Hood River, past some glorious scenery. Plan a stop at the Multnomah Falls, detour over and back on the aptly named Bridge of the Gods, and break for lunch in Cascade Locks at Brigham Fish Market, where manager Terry Brigham Price has landed much of the catch. The river represented a formidable danger here when Lewis and Clark's party first passed through in their canoes in late 1805. In Undaunted Courage, author Stephen E. Ambrose describes how Native Americans gathered by the hundreds along the banks to watch the white men drown themselves. They survived the portage, however. Today, three locks and four dams have erased those rapids. The river is now a playground with kiteboarders and windsurfers racing around. Like the fast lane, paddle the White Salmon River's middle section with Wet Planet Whitewater, where guide Alex Taylor promised we would get plenty wet while running rapids such as the Top Drop and the Corkscrew. He was right. Or pedal an electric assist bike along the scenic historic Columbia River Highway State Trail and beyond to Mosier with Soul Rides. Later, unwind those sore muscles with a soak at the Society Hotel in Bingen, which opened in 2019. The rooms are utilitarian, but the complimentary soaking pools and sauna will recharge spent batteries. If the slow lane is more your speed, point the wheel towards the Hood River Fruit Loop, where the scent of fresh-picked lavender from Hood River Lavender Farms will fill the car. Then stop for a bite and the ciders at the Gorge White House. End the day with the grateful feast, taste, and experience. Beer, cider, wine, pizza, and more. And Mount Hood views at Grateful Vineyard. Or discover just how well craft beers combine with great food at two of Oregon's best breweries. Pfrim Family Brewers has gained a national reputation for its incredible array of Belgian-influenced artisanal beers. Down the street, innovative brewmaster Dan Peterson and wife Jen open Ferment Breweries Brewing Incorporated in 2018 and are making their mark with unique offerings such as the Sentinel, a saison brewed from wild yeast and Douglas fir tips. Or walk past the downtown brick storefronts, stopping at the bookstore or the toy store. Grab a cone at Mike's Ice Cream or a table on the deck at Three Rivers Grill and dig into the seafood and sausage pasta, taking in the river view. The historic Hood River Hotel, which opened in the heart of downtown over a century ago, has been lovingly restored. Start the day downstairs over the delightful Scandinavian breakfast dishes from Broder Oost. The Columbia Gorge Discovery Center and Museum, nearby in the Dalles, includes displays on the core of Discovery. In Astoria, founded as a fur trading post a few years after the Corps' visit, Astoria later became a 20th century salmon-packing boomtown before the fishing dwindled. Those passages are captured in two worthwhile local museums, the Columbia River Maritime Museum and the Clatsop County Historical Society's Heritage Museum. The city is about a two-hour drive northwest of Portland, where the river meets the Pacific. The sense of history here is palpable, whether seen on the Astoria Columns murals or in displays at the Hanthorne Cannery Museum, commemorating a once bustling fish cannery since converted to shops and restaurants. History comes alive at nearby Fort Clatsop, a reconstruction of the site where Lewis and Clark's party wintered in 1805 to 1806. Here, rangers dress in period clothing daily from late June to Labor Day and over Christmas week, describing the Corps' daily routine and their desperate winter. Their clothes were literally rotting off of their bodies, said Zachary Stocks, an interpretive park ranger. You can hike the 6.5-mile one-way Fort to Sea Trail or circle the 2.4-mile trail around a Coffinberry Lake, a short drive away at Fort Stevens State Park, which also has extensive bike trails. From your room at the luxuriously appointed Cannery Pier Hotel and Spa, newly renovated this year, watch giant car-carrying ships crawl past, destined for Portland. You can borrow a hotel bike and pedal along the waterfront or stroll the downtown shops, including Finwear, a nod to the region's longtime Nordic connections. Among the relative newcomers for drinks stand Blaylock's Whiskey Bar with its tall library of spirits just a ladder away, and Galactic, a tap house arcade with Vinch's games in a futuristic Star Wars setting. In Walla Walla, in fall, the rolling hills surrounding Walla Walla, about 4 hours east of Portland, shimmer with ankle-high harvested wheat. The yellow gold is interspersed by green vineyards, heavy with grapes awaiting harvest, and their future home inside a wine bottle. When Joan Montelet was growing up here in the 1960s, she said, it was just a podunk town surrounded by wheat farms. That assessment arrived while we sampled a selection of creamy, subtle sheep and goat's milk cheeses that she and her husband, Pierre-Louis, have perfected over the past 25 years at Montelat Fromagerie. The area's food scene has evolved during that span to keep pace with Walla Walla's burgeoning reputation as a wine lover's destination. More than 120 wineries call the Walla Walla Valley home today. The downtown core is thriving with restaurants, shops, and more than 30 wine tasting rooms. One of the very few that also houses a production winery is the gorgeous Seven Hills Winery, set in a century-old wood mill. Vestiges of Lewis and Clark's journey remain nearby. At the Fort Walla Walla Museum, a diorama demonstrates the Corps' exchanging of gifts with a local Native American chief. About 45 minutes northeast of the city, the Petite Creek campsite's metal silhouettes sculptures represent party members, a reminder of their passing. That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to Travel here on Al Radio. You can listen to Al Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or your smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.alradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Jeff Chandler saying goodbye from Al Radio.